So today I'd like to pick up case number one from the Book of Equanimity. This book was compiled and versified by Hung Shui, and the book is recognized primarily as a Soto Koan book. In our lineage, it is the third book that we look at in our koan work in the Dokusan room. Hung Shui is a beautiful and insightful Zen teacher. He can pose the imprint of silent illumination, which we read during this morning's sutra service. You can look at Cultivating the Empty Field to read some of his shorter pieces. It's a book translated by Dan Layton. And the last two talks in this session will begin a series of talks on that sutra, the imprint of silent illumination. So today's case reads like this, and this is also case number 92 from the Blue Cliff Record. One day the World Honored One ascended to the rostrum and took his seat. Manju Sri struck the white gavel and said, "Contemplate clearly the Dharma of the King of the Dharma. The Dharma of the King of the Dharma is just this." The World Honored One then got down from his seat. And here is the verse which accompanies the case. Do you see the single wind or not? Unceasingly, she weaves the warp and woof. The woven old brocade contains the forms of spring. But nothing can be done about the spring gods leaking. So do you see the single wind or not? Unceasingly she, and she is creation or Mother Nature, unceasingly she weaves a warp and woof. The woven old brocade contains the forms of spring. But nothing can be done about the spring gods leaking. And Manjushri was known as the spring god. So on the surface, this koan story of the World Honored One ascending to the rostrum appears rather straightforward and clear. It is rather direct, and it can simply mean what it says. The World Honored One, Shakyamuni, walked to the rostrum and took his seat. Manjushri cracked the white gavel, spoke some words, and Shakyamuni Buddha descended. A lovely presentation not hidden in a forest of words, and a good show put on by the two masters with no wasted action. Direct and clear, just like the world of Sesshin, where we have little wasted activity and few words of chatter. The choreography is succinct and coordinated. The bell rings early in the morning and you rise, put on your sitting clothes, and come to the zendo after a fairly quick ritual at the sink and toilet. From then on, you just follow the schedule with little outside distraction. Because our commitment in formal practice is to move as one body, we eat, whether hungry or not, at mealtimes. We work, whether energized or not, during the work period. And we sit and walk at the invitation of bells and clappers. To not do so would be rude to those very bells and clappers who are inviting. So this is very direct and very simple. But the commitment to simplicity creates the possibility of verticality, of depth. When we eliminate all the possibilities of our daily lives and simplify and just sit and just walk and just eat and just chant, the daily ground of normalcy, the thin ground of running from here to there, the flimsy ground of doing this and that, of chasing after outside things cracks, and we are introduced to the depths of what is possible in this one and only life we live. This simple engenders the possibility of seeing and of experiencing what is always right before our eyes and ears and nose. With the simple, we linger because we are committed to here, to now, because there is no other. There is no other place. There is no other time. In the simple, we linger because we aren't running from here to there, whether physically, emotionally, or spiritually, chasing outside ourselves for relief, for love, for distraction. On this fourth day of session, please, right now, commit to be fully here. Each of us depends on you to fully and wholeheartedly participate. If you have some resistance, that is natural. But in this practice, we don't retreat, but lean into the resistance. We gently linger and lean, and we persist. When someone is missing during sitting, walking, eating, or chanting, an instability arises in the room. The missing is akin to losing a part of our bodies, and it both hurts when that happens, and the room loses some of its hard-gained solidity. The zendo becomes shaky, and it teeters. Of course, if you are sick, Madeline and you, or Scott and you, will come up with a course that will work for all of us. As I said a couple days ago, on a logistical level, this one body practice of Sesshin helps all of us to function with a lessening of confusion. But below the logistics, this one body is the natural configuration of the universe. And Sesshin, which means to touch, to be touched by, and to express the great heart of the Buddha body, allows us to experience, allows us that experience. And this touching and expressing is where the real healing of the individual and the world occurs, not in taking a longer walk, a longer rest, or a longer stretching session. In the opening chapter of the Diamond Sutra, the world-honored one put on his robes, did his ablutions, walked into the nearby town, and made his begging rounds. He then walked back to the forest grove, washed his feet and hands, took his seat, and ate. After that, he crossed his legs, adjusted his robe and body, and again turned his awareness to what was before him. After he crossed his legs and turned his attention, Subhuti approached him, bowed, and asked how they too, Shakyamuni Buddha's disciples, should walk, stand, lie down, and sit. His response, in a sense, simply put words, maybe unnecessary words, to his beautifully choreographed daily ritual of one teaching and accord. And thus, from that, the rest of the Diamond Sutra unfolded, all from his walking, sitting, standing, and lying down in the first few paragraphs of the first chapter. In this koan, the complete teaching takes place in the first sentence. One day, the world-honored one ascended the rostrum and took his seat. That's it. That is the totality of this practice. One thing, one action, one activity. You might say one presentation or teaching in a chord. This is being fully embodied, fully involved, and fully alive. When our lives are simplified by letting go, by abandoning our ruminations, our anxieties, and our hesitations, when we let go of our daydreaming, regrets, and fantasies, when we abandon our mind doodlings, drawings, and erasures, what is right before us is enough. This is the very mind that can eliminate global climate change, the mind that is fulfilled, the mind that is filled by what is right before it, notices the glistening and the brightness and the light that is all things. It hears the Dharma expounded by the first morning's thrush and is filled. It hears the Dharma expounded by the late evening's nighthawks falling through the sky, and it's filled. It hears the Dharma expounded by the sad, plaintive woof of the puppy left for the morning's zazen. And it's filled by the heartbreaking smells of a dead fawn on the road, and by the heartbreaking sight of a battered child, and by the sounds of a starving, forgotten dog. And it is by being filled by the almost overwhelming beauty, by the heartbreaking desolation, and by the utter ordinariness of daily life, that we are moved and can change the world on whatever level we operate in and on. We do not do this practice in isolation, ever. We do not do it alone, ever. We are always, whether conscious of it or not, fully participating in the world's unfolding as the world's unfolding. In this case, Shakyamuni Buddha ascended the rostrum and sat in silence. Another time, he picked up a flower and twirled it. In another story, he sat and then expounded and gave us the Diamond Sutra. Each of these presentations were the beautiful sounds of silence. Sometimes silence comes forth as the rush of a jet plane overhead. At others, as a lone dove cooing right before breakfast. Sometimes the silence comes forth in sobs, and at other times in laughter. And as I just said, sometimes it comes forth as the twirling of a flower, a presentation of a new sutra, or a sitting with no words or thoughts. Please don't think silence has anything to do with not hearing a sound. That is just one form and one aspect of silence. We are always filled with. We are always hearing the wonderful sounds of silence. We just need to stop. We just need to stop and hear what is actually happening. So when we understand like this, we can see that when Manjushri struck the white gavel, that loud crack which was heard around the world was simply an echo of the Buddha's presentation. Manjushri's gavel strike wasn't an addendum to Shakyamuni Buddha's presentation, but its natural and clear rejoinder. Kind of like our call to mealtime. First, the outdoor clappers followed quite beautifully by the Incan. One teaching, then the next teaching, and then the next. Each in accord with the preceding. each an echo but filling a different field with unique tone and timbre. The imprint on silent illumination says, throughout the universe, all things glisten, and each expounds the Dharma. They attest to each other and accord in dialogue, responding in perfect harmony. Each thing, each person, you and you and me, occupy our own unique Dharma position, but each is utterly entangled with all others. Shakyamuni Buddha sat in silence. Manjushri cracked the white gavel. Two presentations of the silence that we are surrounded by, that we are immersed in, and that, in fact, we are. In case 7 of the Book of Equanimity, the teacher of the monastery, Yao Shan, had not ascended the rostrum for a long time. The head monk said, all the monks have been anxious for instruction for a long time. Your Reverence, won't you please expound the Dharma? Yao Shan ordered the bell and drum to sound, calling the assembly together for a Dharma presentation. The assembly gathered, and Yao Shan ascended the rostrum, and after sitting there for a while, he descended and returned to his room. The head monk followed him and asked, you consented to expound the Dharma. How is it that you uttered not a word? Yao Shan said, for sutras, there are sutra specialists. For Shastras, there are Shastra specialists. Why do you wonder at this old monk? At another time, and I imagine Yao Shan was a little younger and not yet the head of his own temple, he was sitting in Zazen when the great Shi Tao came upon him. Shi Tao asked him, what are you doing? Yao Shan said, I'm doing nothing at all. Shi Tao said, then you're sitting idly. Yao Shan replied, if I were sitting idly, then I would be doing something. Shi Tao wondered further, you say you're doing nothing. What is it you're not doing? Yao Shan replied, even 1,000 Buddhas do not know. So you say you're not doing, you say you're doing nothing. What is it you're not doing? And he says, even 1,000 Buddhas do not know. But as we know from the other day, wildcats and white ox do know. What do you think? Was Yao Shan in accord with Shakyamuni Buddha's quiet sitting? Are those two things the same or different? Or is Yao Shan making an entirely different point? So Shakyamuni Buddha sat, and Manjushri struck with the white gavel. Incidentally, in parts of Asia, white is thought of as having no color or an absence of color. So Manjushri's is a gavel of no color, and maybe of no shape, and maybe even of no form. And with that understanding, no color, no shape, no form, we enter the theater of the Heart Sutra and the Diamond Sutra, as Shakyamuni Buddha and Manjushri make real their play. With the striking of a gavel with no color, we're invited to listen closely, to listen with ears finely attuned to hearing the subtle sound. And then Manjushri spoke, saying, contemplate clearly. If you contemplate clearly, then you'd hear exactly what Shakyamuni Buddha was saying as he sat quietly. Actually, if you listen closely, you can hear it right now. Contemplate clearly the Dharma of the King of the Dharma. The Dharma of the King of the Dharma is just this. Or, as another translation says, is thus, which is the root of the word Tathagata. A mistaken third translation says, it is just like this. In Zen, it is not just like this or like anything else. It isn't like sitting under the Bodhi tree. You are right now sitting under that very tree on his cushion, wearing his robe and eating from his bowl. Zen isn't like something else or about anything else. There's only just this. There's only thus. There isn't arising, duration, and cessation. Each thing of the past, of the present, and of the future is fully manifest here, now. Each is presented fully in his silence, in the gravel crack, in her words, in their cries, and in our laughter. Nothing is hidden or left out. So please contemplate clearly. Look closely. The world-honored one then got down from his seat, and so the Taisho, which never began, ended. Or is it the Taisho that is always beginning, just continued? First in silence, then with a gavel smack, then words, and now a descent. Just this, again and again, lifetime after lifetime. And I think maybe after all these words, the verse following this case, hopefully, will be a little more clear. So it goes like this. Do you see the single wind or not? Unceasingly she weaves the warp and woof. The ancient woven brocade contains the forms of spring. And nothing can be done about Manjushri's leaking.